other than Susan Fisher, who I talked to today, you're the only one who isn't a freshman legislator that I've spoken to. So you've been around for a little bit longer. What I've heard from some of the other legislators is that they're surprised at the slow pace of the start of the session. What would you say? Having been around for a little while, what's different about this session?
Well, we have a new speaker, so that's new. We're getting to know Tim Moore in the House. Seems like a good fellow. I look forward to reaching across and working with him. He comes from Kings Mountain, and I'm a son of the American Revolution, so we at least have that certainly in common and interest. So leadership is different. I don't know, it just depends on your perspective, whether it's slow or fast. They have fast-tracked fracking, which is completely unnecessary. And quite dangerous for our future as a state. They have jumped ahead in the budget to sort of snooker the public on the gas tax. They're going to lower it a penny and a half between now and July and call it a tax cut, and then they're going to raise it 6.5. So at the end of the day, North Carolinians will pay, you know, $400 million more in gas tax. That's just so they slice and dice their agenda, and then we'll get the budget, and these things are sort of already been done before the budget comes out. That's always interesting. The same thing with the sort of incentives. They take the gas tax off of jet fuel and they put the gas tax on the poor working men and women trying to get to and from work. So that's some of the things they've been up to.
With the gas tax, because it was tied to the price of fuel, it was projected to fall under 30 cents pretty rapidly. And that being the only way, well, it seems to be one of the primary ways that roads are funded in the state.
Well, it's a little complicated, so sure. You got to get how your leg's being pulled. So the citizens are paying 37.5 cents now every gallon of gas in tax. Now, why is it so high? We're one of the highest in the nation. And the reason that was is that the formula was adjusted during the $4 gas of George W. Bush, because everybody was having to cut back their driving because they couldn't afford $4 gas. And as a consequence, we had to adjust the formula to keep the revenue sufficient for the roads. So the situation is that we're paying 37.5 cents now in gas tax. And of that 37.5 cents, 9 of it is going to the general fund. It's not going to improve your roads or anything else that they claim they need this money for. So now that the gas prices have dropped to, you know, $2 gas and not $4 gas, there's no reason to keep the gas tax high. So the formula, it was written to self-adjust, and it is self-adjusting, and we would be back down at 29.9, I think, which is what we had capped it before we got in the $4 gas dilemma. There's plenty of money at 29.9 coming into the Highway Trust Fund to take care of our road projects. As a matter of fact, if they weren't giving 9 cents over from the Highway Trust Fund into the general fund, when it dropped down to 29.9, they would actually be a penny and a half more new money for roads. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, what are they doing with it when they send it over to the general fund? They're giving millionaires big tax breaks, billionaire corporations huge tax breaks. So they're funding the tax breaks for the billionaire corporations and the millionaires on the backs of the poor working families who are traveling back and forth to work and trying to get their kids to soccer practice. And that's just dead wrong.
Well, you know, they would argue that the corporate tax cuts help to draw businesses. Now, they're also looking for incentives.
That's called trickle-down, mm-hmm. and you can't find an economist that can support that.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as the businesses, what about these incentives that were you in support of the incentives for what McCrory was looking for as far as the $40 million for JDIG? Or do you prefer a more cautious approach?
Well, I am not opposed to incentives. I'm for economic growth. I'm for jobs. I'm for a strategy to do that. This governor has pulled everything out of the regions, so we don't have an Advantage West to receive any JDIG grants. All the grants he had in mind were focused in one project that was going to be his premier talk about, walk about project. It wasn't for the state of North Carolina. No, he just had one big auto plant he wanted to deliver, so to speak, and run on. You know, it's not general economic development for North Carolina. So the problem that's happened in the last under this governor and is they've just pulled everything back to Raleigh under his thumb. There's no regional economic development being funded to speak of. You can't find the Department of Commerce. They've just about closed it down. Mm. And then he comes and asks for these special incentives just for him. It's called they're walking around money, and I was not in favor of it. I wasn't in favor of raising the gas tax on the citizens while you're eliminating the gas tax on the jets in the state. So, because it's money either way, it's tax money. If you give it away and don't charge the jet companies for their gas, then you double it up on the citizens. It's just completely unfair. You know, it's stealing from the poor and giving to the rich.
Yeah. What do you think then about what the Senate has done with the incentives? And I know that part of what they want to do, I'm not sure if they did vote this, was to sort of cap direct where the incentive money would go and try to keep all of it from going to, say, Wake County and Mecklenburg County and spread the wealth around a little bit, so to speak.
Well, that would be an improvement over what the governor had in mind. They're not very progressive in what they're funding. So if it comes over from the Senate, as bad as the House is, it'll be 10 times as worse as what we've been discovering.
So what do you think about Harry Brown's proposal as far as sales tax and his redistribution model for the sales tax?
I'm not sold on it at all. It's stealing from somebody and giving to somebody else. I'm very skeptical. Some of my towns have said they lose seriously in it. One of the things the General Assembly has done is just really turned a deaf ear to our cities, our municipalities, and our local governments, and they just run roughshod over them. So everybody's concerned about it. It's a big change. I'm a little skeptical of it, and I'm just following it. It's not over, I assure you.
What did you think of the Historic Preservation Tax Credit, and were you in favor of renewing?
Absolutely in favor of the Historic Preservation Tax Credit. It's restored Waynesville and Bryson City and Asheville. It's restored Burnsville. I mean, I can't think of a little town. Marshall, we've all over the mountains, we have used the Historic Tax Credit to restore our architectural fabric of our historic towns. I'm an architect. I get it. It's good investment. It's good for the citizens, and it's good for the general economy. And it creates jobs, and they can show that we've shown it every time. Mm-hmm. It is a very public-purposed tax credit. Mm-hmm. So we have restored that so far in the House, and hopefully the Senate will go along with us on that. And I worked hard to help that effort.
I read an article before you came in. I think it was the Black Mountain News. I was talking about your election win, mm-hmm. And it was talking about you having a mixed night, obviously, because you had won. But you were disappointed that we lost Kay Hagan from the Senate and that there weren't, I guess, stronger gains made. But here in Western North Carolina, Democrats had a very good night compared to a lot of other areas.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we had good candidates, for one thing. Brian Turner and John Ager are just stellar citizens, hard workers, and their feet are on the ground, and they're attentive and a great new members of the General Assembly. And I think, you know, there's been some foolishness in the General Assembly, and at least in Western North Carolina, we're beginning to catch on. You know, we need to work together for the prosperity of everyone. It is the common good, the general welfare that we need to advance. This is government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to be so partisan and ideological. Mm-hmm. It needs to be effective and responsive to the citizens' needs.
When you get back to Raleigh, and I guess the focus is going to kind of shift towards the budget, what are some of the things that you hope that this legislature will prioritize?
Well, what's made North Carolina great has been our education system. We've led the nation in early childhood education. They've rolled that back. There is no better place to spend a dollar than on an at-risk child. It pays off tremendously in the life of the child and in the citizenry and in the general cost to society. It can take a situation that might be desperate for a child and turn them into a very productive member of their community. The other one is, of course, K-12. The governor's budget, which is the only one we've seen, gave a third of the teachers a modest raise, just didn't get them back to their standard steps through this era of the Great Recession, which we seem not to be able to get over in North Carolina. Two-thirds of them, it gave no raise, gave the state employees no raise. We're just undermining our institutional fabric that keeps us going. Like I say, there's no Department of Commerce, so who's creating the jobs? Well, you know, it's all trickle down. A low-wage strategy. Well, a low-wage strategy is not a productive strategy. There's no way to lead with a low-wage, low-education strategy. The way to lead is with investing in education. And North Carolina has led in higher ed. That's the thing that just is really disturbing me, because that really is truly the engine of our economy, the engine of the 21st century changing, dynamic, competitive, global economy. It's higher ed. It's a better, smarter workforce. Well, that just doesn't happen. You invest in those institutions at the community college. You invest in those great universities. You invest in your private colleges and universities across our state. North Carolina has been the premier higher ed state in the nation, but not under McCrory and this Republican regime. They have slashed it. I'm going down. My wife is a graduate of UNC's med school. We're going down to their annual banquet to celebrate a peer getting an award. Last year we went as well, and Dean Roper reported that his med school, the greatest med school for primary care in America, had its budget cut 40% last session, and they're at it again. So you can't keep a teaching research institution alive with those kinds of cuts. We're losing Nobel Prize winning faculty members. we're just it is a tragedy to watch. So higher ed is definitely something I hope that gets some relief from these just arbitrary and capricious cuts. They seem to think higher ed is against their interest as Republicans, and I don't get this. I don't understand it, because it's made North Carolina great, and it'll keep North Carolina great. Or if we kill the golden goose, we will take a second seat to South Carolina and Virginia and everywhere else.
You know, I saw it. I hope I'm not getting the person wrong. I think it was Skip Stam, a quote in an article about some kind of initiative for community colleges. And the quote was really spectacular. It was talking about who the serious students were, and it was comparing community college students with college students. And he was saying, these are the serious students. Why we're trying to give them a break? We're trying to give the serious students a break, not the kids who just want to go and drink beer and watch basketball. And it was an interesting comment to me. It seemed like there was a lot of disdain for the people who attend UNC Chapel Hill or, say, Duke or NC State. And it seemed to think that these kids would go to school just to drink beer and watch basketball, which if you've ever been there, you know that's not the case.
Yeah, it is disrespectful and inappropriate and off base, and just they just completely don't get what's made us a great state.
When you go to UNC and you've mentioned losing people on
I'm an NC State grad. I want you to know my wife is the UNC grad. But
what's the mood that you hear from people? I mean,
well, the college campuses are they're under assault. They know it. Their budgets are. They're trying to do the best. I mean, we have a great institutional fabric. We have a great heritage of higher ed that they're riding on. But to be rather than to seem, our great state motto means that we support this. We don't just take credit for what we didn't build and trash it and claim credit, which is all I can tell that are doing. You know, when McCrory says we're going to create innovation in North Carolina, he doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. But we're going to slash the university budget 20% while we do that. That's not how you do it. The how you do it is you invest in these higher ed educational institutions that create the workforce, that create the research, that spin off the startups and the new companies, and everybody thrives.
Mm-hmm.
And healthcare is the other thing that's just particularly out of the Senate. If they can trash it and it's related to healthcare, they will. I mean, they have been inventive on how to make it worse. They haven't been attentive to making it better at all.
What are some examples of that, would you say?
Well, not expanding Medicaid is your listeners will not believe that they have paid last session $3.6 billion and didn't get a penny of it, $3.6 billion of federal tax dollars, and the governor and the legislature denied it coming back to the state. Now, when you send $3.6 billion last session, it's $5 billion this session. They're going to send $5 billion out of North Carolina because North Carolinians pledge allegiance to the flag, the republic for which it stands, and they pay their taxes. And they will not let those tax dollars flow back down to help the working, low-wage workers, hardworking folks, have health care. They just seem not to be able to understand what it means to help somebody needs help.
Mm-hmm.
If you're low-wage, you've never really had good health care. Finally, we're paying for it, and the Republican legislature and governor will not let it flow back to North Carolina. So for every $1 million, you create 10 primary jobs and 10 secondary jobs. That's 20 jobs per million. That's a good rule of thumb that I'm using a program called Impact. It's an economic development software, but I'm using that from their metric. So for every $1 million you send out of your state, the jobs follow the money, you lose 20 jobs. For every $1 million you bring to your state in investment, in healthcare, in jobs, good jobs, jobs my citizens want to have, serving their neighborhood and their communities and their and Western North Carolina, good jobs here, for every million we bring back, we create 20 jobs in healthcare and the follow-on jobs. Well, not to do that means this General Assembly and this governor are denying 50,000 jobs that we've paid for. So now, I don't know if you've ever seen anything as dumb as that, but I never have in government. That's the dumbest thing I have ever seen.
Getting back to education just briefly, the Board of Governors just voted to raise tuition for UNC campuses. They've also forced out Tom Ross. They've also forced the closure of 3 clinics, one of which was seen as a lightning rod for the Gene Nichols editorials blasting Republicans.
Three institutes, I guess.
Three institutes, sure, mm-hmm. sure. What do you think of the job of the Board of Governors? And a lot of people are alleging that politics are at play on the Board of Governors as well.
It appears to be the case, you know. Can you track an elephant in the snow?
All right. Well, now you're the first person that I've had outside of Buncombe County. Now I come to this issue new. I'm not from Western North Carolina, but I've heard some about the proposal to annex Lake Junaluska into Waynesville. And as I understand it, it keeps getting held up in the legislature. Now, where do you stand on that, and what's going on with that right now?
Well, it's a local issue. I have met with the town officials, and I've met with the Junaluska officials, and I support their opportunity to do that. I'm working with my Republican colleague. We're together on this, Jim Davis in the Senate and I in the House. I represent the area. I both represent Waynesville and Lake Junaluska. He represents all of Waynesville and Lake Junaluska. We've had a little interference, but I think we've worked our way around it. We have a bill this term that will put it on the ballot and in the municipal election for all the normal protocol is to have the area to be annexed vote if they're interested in being annexed. And if they vote to be annexed, they can be annexed 51%. They can be annexed. If they vote against it, they can't be annexed. Well, we're going the second mile because we seem to be having a lot of difficulty. We're going to have an election in the town of Waynesville to receive Lake Junaluska. Do you want to receive Lake Junaluska? And we feel we do because it's a great part of our community that'll be a good asset to the town. So we're going to put it on the ballot if our bill passes, and we think we have covered all the reservations, and hopefully we'll put this to bed and put it out to the citizens to decide in the next municipal election.
I believe
that's correct.
Do you know why it's faced so much resistance and why it hasn't moved in the past few years?
Well, Michelle Presnell has just chosen to intervene and not let it pass through the House. So it's just been held up in the House. I am in the minority, and they have just denied it moving.
I see. What was the reason given, or was there?
Your guess is as good as mine.
All right. Well, your silence answered me already. So what is it like being in the minority party? How do you push legislation? What are the working relationships like?
Well, I try to reach across the aisle when I can. I try to speak the truth to power when I can. You know, it's really about all the people. I'm not for Democrat jobs. I'm for independents and Republicans having jobs. I'm for every child in North Carolina, every every child, no matter what their political persuasion is, getting a good education. I mean, I want everyone to thrive. Healthcare, it's not a partisan issue. Everybody needs healthcare. Republicans, Democrats, independents, rich and poor. Everybody needs healthcare. We need to have some common sense. So that's where I generally try to fall. I stand up for Medicaid expansion because that's the absolute craziest thing we're not doing. That would do the most for my district. I'm losing 400 jobs this session. I would be gaining 400 jobs. It's an 800 job swing in Haywood, Jackson, and Swain. It's three times that for Buncombe. And it's the same for every other legislator. I mean, Medicaid is distributed fairly evenly. It's if anything, it's progressive. In other words, where there's more poor people, there's more investment. So it would be good for the whole state not to do it. The sick didn't get well. Your money left the state. We're financing. North Carolina is paying for the health care in New York and Michigan and California and Kentucky and a few of the smart states. But we're not. Our taxes are not helping our citizens. And we're losing the jobs and the economic development. We're behind in jobs. North Carolina is slower than the rest of the nation in recovery. Yes, the Obama administration has done a fabulous job in getting us out of the George W. Bush recession. We have had great progress for 4 or 5 years straight. But North Carolina is falling behind. If you're leaving 100,000 jobs on the table and sending $5 billion every General Assembly to the rest of the nation, you're falling behind. Our whole budget's $20 billion. We're sending a quarter of it to another state for nothing. I don't know how the scale of that is so astounding that the people ought to be charging the legislature. I mean, that's sort of what Moral Mondays were about. Some people were getting it.
So they've argued that with Medicaid expansion, that the federal government pays something like 90% of it up to a certain point, or no, I think it's all of it right now, and then it becomes 90%. They're arguing that that they can't trust the government to uphold its.
You can't trust the government to pay Social Security, to pay Medicaid, to do anything. Well, that's just so much ideology. It's crazy. No, Social Security will be protected. Medicaid, Medicare will be protected, the rest of the nation that's accepting it is getting fabulous care. They've got the jobs, and their citizens are not being bankrupt every time they have an emergency at the hospital. That's just ludicrous. Let me say about the first 4 years, and I think we've passed two of those, so maybe the next couple are 100% federal dollars. In other words, it more than pays for itself. The next 4 years are 90-10. So the state share is 10%, the federal share is 90%. The whole program was 8 years. You don't have an infinity on anything, but it will continue to go forward unless the courts or something else, something that is unknown happens. But if things go according to expectations, when you get to the 90% years and the 10% state share, we're creating 50,000 jobs. These are all new taxpayers. This legislature, this very legislature we're in, is foregoing $460 million in new tax revenue. That's almost $500 million that could be used for anything, education, economic development. Because this isn't raising anybody's taxes. This has given 50,000 people jobs and making taxpayers and productive citizens out of them.
No, the most recent argument that I've seen was to wait because of the expected a ruling from the Supreme Court on Obamacare regarding. Now, I'm not sure if that's going to affect anything to do with Medicaid. But
well, they've wasted $3.6 billion last session, and they're wasting it $1.25 billion a year now waiting. Let's get on with it. Let's be part of America. Our citizens pay their taxes, and they deserve to have their taxes spent in their state.
One of the first bills that came to the fore when the session got underway was this bill to have magistrates the ability to opt out of same-sex marriages.
Well, that's their agenda.
Well, what do you think of that?
They're not creating any jobs. No, no.
Well, what do you think of that? And and their argument is that the these are people who have sincerely held religious beliefs that are being forced to do something that they don't believe in. Now, what do you think of that? And also the two supplemental religious freedom bills that were obviously drew a lot of press to Arkansas and Indiana last week.
Well, I think we have freedom of religion in America. We have equal process to law. So a public servant serves everybody equally. If they can't do that, they don't need to be a magistrate. It's everybody gets treated fairly, no matter what their religious beliefs that come in for the public services. We pledge allegiance to the flag and its liberty and justice for all.
Mm-hmm. Now, sticking with some social issues, the issue of abortion now has come to the front.
This is all their agenda. Show me the jobs. Show me the people that it's helping.
Well, now we've talked about healthcare. Now, this would be a healthcare issue. So, as far as abortion goes, the new proposal that I've seen would increase the waiting period for a woman to get an abortion from 24 hours to 72 hours. And it would also make some changes to the way UNC and ECU are able to.
Yeah, they're just so public universities cannot provide health care to women. That is ludicrous. This is a private, personal agenda. Everybody, every woman, every family needs full health care.
And so that would extend to abortion coverage as well.
It would extend to women's health care issues. One in three American women have had an abortion. You know, it's an ideological issue. I believe women should choose. Choose life so you and your children will prosper. The operative thing is choose it. Not accidental, not rape, not incest, not abuse. Choice.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that the argument would be that this doesn't get rid of abortion. Some would argue this makes it safer. Some would argue that it gives women longer to decide. Now, what would you say to that?
It's just obstructionist politics, period.
Mm-hmm. Now, one more on the controversial social issues. I know that there's been a proposal, several gun bills that have come up from Senator Jeff Tart. Now, he's introduced several. One would create a group of people that would be able to carry concealed weapons wherever concealed weapon ban is posted, like a sign is up. Now, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at these because I know they were just filed. Okay. Well, I guess in speaking to gun rights in general, Second Amendment rights, and gun control, what do you think of efforts to ease restrictions on guns or efforts to place more restrictions on guns, playing both sides of that?
You know, I fully support the Second Amendment, people's right to bear arms and, you know, an orderly militias and important to a state, is important to our founders, but it is orderly and appropriate. We've had good, solid state laws. North Carolina's been a very common sense state. I think we need to stick with some common sense.
Mm-hmm.
While we do this, How we protect these important rights.
You mentioned fracking earlier, and you mentioned it was dangerous. Now, so are you against opening the state to fracking, which it is now?
It is. I have argued that we have a very small play in North Carolina in natural gas. There's nobody denying that. We're not Wyoming and we're not Pennsylvania. We have a small play. We have a very valuable, very important water source. Our groundwater, our aquifers are just as important as our surface water in North Carolina. They have just broken promise after promise on this whole process. Our state constitution says, and I quote, "It shall be the policy of the state to conserve and protect the lands and waters for the benefit of all the citizenry, not for a handful of wildcat frackers to make a quick buck and leave our water ruined forever." Mm-hmm. You can't fix this. They pump millions of gallons in every well of a toxic cocktail that the law protects the frackers. They don't even have to reveal what the contents are. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really, I can get upset about wasting $5 billion by not expanding Medicaid. You know, a dollar circulates. It'll circulate again tomorrow. It's a tragedy to waste it. It's a tragedy for the people who lost their health care. But it'll be a new day. When you poison your water, it's poisoned. It's forever. Mm-hmm. And water is needed for every generation. So it is immoral and stupid beyond belief, greedy, and I don't even get these Republicans doing this. I mean, I don't think that bad of them. Surely they're smarter than this, I say.
Oh, just read an article not long ago about Oklahoma, and they're dealing with a surge in earthquakes from fracking, some would say. And yet there is still a debate. There have been tons of earthquakes.
There's no debate that it poisons the water.
Right.
There's no debate that it poisons the air.
Yeah.
There's no debate that this legislature has broken its promise to the citizens to protect them mm-hmm. and their water resources and their air resources.
What I was going to say is, interestingly, there is still a debate there in Oklahoma over whether or not it's good for the state because there has been a surge in the economy, I guess, for the towns that have fracking, or at least, you know,
you're a boomtown fracking town, mm-hmm. you're a boomtown fracking town. You can trade beautiful Asheville, beautiful Waynesville for one of them if you want, but I won't. I won't trade a town in North Carolina for one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, we are a wonderful state, wonderful variety, vacation land, we used to call it. I mean, because it's a vacation everywhere. It's just gorgeous. Let's protect our citizens' land and water for all their benefit.
Well, speaking of land and water, do you think that the legislative action so far on coal ash, and as far as getting the Dan River cleaned up and a lot of these coal ash sites taken care of, do you think it's been enough? Have they not gone far enough? Where do you stand on that?
I'll say that was one of the successes of last session. Obviously, I think there's been some failures, but that was a success. I thought Chuck McGrady did a fabulous job stewarding the strongest possible bill through the North Carolina legislature. I was proud of my state on that point. It was silent on who pays, but we have a good bill to protect the state from the coal ash issues. I mean, it's a moving target. We have to pay attention. It's not over. But we're moving in the right direction with a strong first step. So I am proud of that bill. What we left it was not politically possible to solve this last mm-hmm. session, is who's going to pay. And I think the polluter needs to pay, not the citizens. And my point there is Duke and their predecessors have had the privilege of skirting this issue and without paying for it for a long time. We have been putting it in front of them for decades. Mm-hmm. You know, they are a pretty powerful lobby, whether you're a Democrat in charge or a Republican in charge. They're a very powerful force in the legislature. Mm-hmm. Take my word for it. So we warned them, asked them to fix it, kept it sort of voluntarily. But now we actually have a law. And again, that is one of the strong things that this Republican General Assembly has done. Mm-hmm. And now we just have to make sure the right culprit pays mm-hmm. for the cleanup.
Sticking with the environment, I've read recently about a proposal to on solar power that would allow third parties to sell directly to customers, which apparently has bipartisan support. Does it have your support? Do you know
well,
what I'm?
I'm all for innovation in the electric grid. A smarter, more informed grid is the way of the future. The governor's budget eliminated solar tax credits, which is a big mistake. We have an industry that's creating tens of thousands of jobs, and really leading in innovation. We've cut the price of panels by half since we initially started the tax credit. We're moving forward in the right direction. There's a lot of potential for saving energy, lowering the cost of energy. Again, a low-cost energy future is a competitive, promising future for North Carolinians. That's not all the time what you hear out of Duke. They want to raise your rates, and they don't like the options that are alternative that are, in the long run, will lower your rates. I don't think there's any question that in the next 20 or 30 years, we'll see a lot of alternative energy in the grid. Because I'm an architect, we have a 2030 challenge that there's enough energy falls on most buildings, enough solar energy to heat, cool, and light them. We just need to advance the technology and the techniques, and that will happen. Mm-hmm. It's just, is North Carolina going to lead? Are we going to be the innovator? Are we going to have the jobs? Or are we going to follow and drag and be a high-priced energy state in the meantime? You know, it's really a strategic decision. Mm. So I'm for being an innovative future seeker, not a throwback to coal in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And that's so much that I would characterize this General Assembly.
One bill that I saw that you had co-sponsored, I believe, had something to do with raw milk.
I haven't won this, but we call it our Amish cow bill. I grew up with a cow. My grandfather and grandmother had a cow. I used to love to, as a little boy, go with my granddad to milk every morning. And if you've ever had a cow, and cow gives 3-4 gallons, a good one, a day of milk. So we always shared milk with the neighbors. And, of course, you have a cow, and a cow doesn't stay fresh all the time. So you always had a collaboration where your cow was fresh while the other cow was dormant and whatever. So you had a sort of routine in the community where you provided the milk for 6 months, and then your neighbor provided it for 6 months, and it worked out fine. Everybody had fresh butter and buttermilk, and everybody had plenty of milk and cottage cheese, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's small farmers. It's not opening-ended raw milk. It's just you can buy a share of a cow. So you can go down to your local farmer, and you can be a fourth owner in a cow, and you'll get a fourth of the milk from that cow. And that farmer will look after it for you in the deal. And I think it's a reasonable agricultural small. It helps the small. We have a lot of small agricultural, ASAP here, the Agricultural Sustainable Project in Appalachia. Because all of our farmers are small farmers. They just have a cow or two, or a goat or two, or a And they have a small garden, but they can deliver an awfully nice box of vegetables to you every week. Mm-hmm. So I'm just doing that. It's been my experience. I don't see it. The dairy folks hate it. They think it's going to spoil them.
Milk
for everybody. But I think it's very reasonable and manageable, and it's not open-ended. You have to own part of the cow. You get your own raw milk from your own cow.
Oh, I see.
It's okay. Just you divide the cow up rather than the farmer own the cow and sell you the milk. You own a part of the cow.
So, all right.
Because you're allowed to have your own cow
yeah.
and drink your own milk. Mm-hmm. It just sort of adds a twist to that. So
but now,
more people can have fresh milk.
So is raw milk illegal?
Raw milk is illegal to sell.
I see. Okay. Interesting. And personal consumption?
Personal consumption of your own cow's milk is okay.
It's okay. All right. Interesting. You learned something new.
We're just making a little niche to widen that personal consumption.
I see. Gotcha.
To give our small farmers another opportunity to serve, a group who like fresh milk.
Right. Those are the questions I think I had. I didn't ask you about the Wake County Board of Commissioners, the Greensboro City Council. I don't know if you would like to talk about those.
I wouldn't. I had to pass on that, but
okay.
It's crazy.
Well, I guess that's it. Is there anything that I didn't focus on that you wanted to talk about? Or
there's all these little things to make school board elections partisan. Mm-hmm. That's just going backwards. We need to work together, certainly for schools. And we need to support local government. It's three branches of government, guys. It's the same taxpayer. Mm-hmm. He pays his federal taxes. He pays his state taxes. He pays his local taxes. It's the same guy. He's your neighbor. Let's work for him. Let's work with his federal government. Let's work with his local government. Let's don't be whacking them and making their lives miserable. Let's help our taxpayer, our citizens thrive in North Carolina, all of them.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Queen. I appreciate it.
Thank you.